Welcome back to this week's episode of Toys on Tap. We have another big one with Manor Monster, Brandon, coming on the podcast, killing it, telling us all about Warlords of War, how they started, where they come from, where they're headed. If you want more Toys on Tap, you can jump on all socials at Toys on Tap. If you want a little bit extra, you can jump on the YouTube channel at Toys on Tap, see unboxings and reviews, do that kind of stuff. And if you want even more, you can jump on the Patreon, patreon.com/ToysOnTap. That's where you get episodes of the Nitty Gritty, which is 10 to 15 minutes extra with each artist that comes on. These episodes are incredible. They are just very specific questions based around the artist of the week. Now let's get to this week's episode of Toys on Tap. Heck yeah. Brandon, I'm pumped that you're on.
Well, thanks for having me. It's it's exciting to be doing an interview. It's been a little while.
But you've been crushing it since 2017, which we're for sure going to talk about.
2012.
So the 2017 as far as Instagram goes. So you've been crushing it for a while.
Yeah, yeah. 2012 is when I kind of debuted as a resin artist.
We got to jump in because I got to hear that story. Because the fact that you, like, there's 5 years that I don't know about that I can't get to. Yeah, we got to talk about it for sure. I don't know if you've heard an episode of Toys on Tap before.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Great. This is all about you, and I'm pumped. And we're finally pulling people like yourself who have been around for quite a while and have figures that are absolutely pristine and have just taken their craft to a whole new level. So thank you so much for offering your time today.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, I'm excited to be sitting down with you. I'm a regular listener. I'm an audio consumer, so mm-hmm. I've not yet caught any of the video portions of the interview. So I'm gonna do my best.
Yeah. Also, a great confession for everyone to know my own sins. Was it 2 weeks ago that we were scheduled?
Two, three, something like that.
And it was like, summer has been such a blur, and I got that message from you that said, like, hey, so how are we doing this? And I had like double or triple booked some stuff, and it was such a bummer. So thank you again for showing grace in that. But before we get started, please introduce yourself. Tell us who you are, what you do.
I am Brandon Michael Barker. I am the owner and artist behind Manor Monster Studios. My current toy line that is in production is called Warlords of War. That is war spelled W-O-R, like Wizard of War for any of you old Atari heads. That's pretty much my gig these days is designing and manufacturing Warlords of War, which is a Glios compatible 3-inch action figure line.
Unreal. Unfreaking real. Can I ask you a question? Like, we're gonna cut back to so many things, but thought. One of the figures from the Warlords of War has a snake head, has purple right here and yellow.
Mm-hmm.
Is that to like an homage to Dino Riders figure?
1,000,000%. Yes.
I love that character. So that's awesome.
It's really good audio when you jump away and don't say anything for a few seconds. That's the guy.
They're such a good size too. When you take pictures of them, they look massive, but I love the 3-inch size.
Well, yeah, you know, I like to get in there and, kind of play with scale visually a little bit and make them look, I always want to keep that sense of that heroic 5.5 scale in my work, even at the 3-inch scale. So everything, it's all about being, you know, larger than life.
Yeah. Well, do me a favor. Take me all the way back. Take me back to childhood. Tell me about the toys, the cartoons, all the stuff you're doing as a kid that kind of is influencing your art career.
It's going to be a pretty familiar story for regular listeners. You know, I was born in 78. So, you know, that's my era. Mm-hmm. Like 82 comes around and, you know, that Christmas, I was inundated with New Joes and Masters of the Universe. And then, you know, like next year, you've got Return of the Jedi coming out. And it was just off to the races from there, you know, especially, you know, once cartoons hit in 84. And then, I mean, that was everything for me. I didn't have any siblings up until I was six. So like, you know, that like 4, 5, 6, you know, really foundational part of my life was spent voraciously consuming that stuff, you know? So, but then, you know, even after that, like I was always kind of an introverted, you know, indoor kid. So
yeah.
I loved playing with toys and just like sitting by myself and playing make-believe and making up stories and you know, role-playing. It was always huge for me. I'd rather be, you know, in my room playing with toys by myself than with friends outside or whatever. So,
yeah. Were you one of the fortunate kids that had like all the toys you could ever want?
No, absolutely not. I mean, I had a fair amount, you know, of kind of a decent mix of stuff, you know, like there was definitely a lot of Star Wars and a lot of Joe and a lot of Motu. There were, you know, a handful of Transformers, but, you know, not a lot. Like I didn't have any like huge, you know, what we now consider grail pieces, like any massive playsets or anything like that. The largest playset that I ever owned was the Fright Zone, you know, so like it was modest, but, you know, I had stuff.
Yeah.
Still. So
when you look back at your childhood, before we go further, what is one toy that you remember the most? The one toy that absolute favorite, all of that.
Absolute favorite. That's a good question. I mean, like I had favorite toys like every year, you know, like the next toy was always my favorite.
Yeah.
You know, but like some standouts for me are Blizzard from G.I. Joe. Definitely one of my favorites. Casey. Ninja Turtles, definitely always a favorite. It was always kind of a rotating, you know, cast of absurdity and adventure. So
yeah, I always come back to one, and I've talked about it on here before. It's this Iceman figure from KB Toys. There is nothing special about this toy.
Was it just the like the original X-Men?
I can't even tell you what it is.
5 POA or
5 points of articulation. Yeah. Maybe 7 because the knees.
Oh, okay.
Bent for sure. Yeah. But it had like he was all blue and he has crystals behind his head and he has a
a
clip on claw and clip on. Right. It was just like I don't even remember playing with it that much, but I do remember that's the toy that like always had. But yeah, I always forget to ask people because we go through toys and then the next thing, like at some point you leave toys behind or you at least step away for a period.
Briefly.
Yeah. So we're talking teenage years, 15, 16.
I collected, like I really like legitimately started collecting Ninja Turtles, you know, and I was getting into my early teens by the time Turtles was out and it was definitely not the cool thing for a kid my age to be into action figures. And especially where I was at, I was in a really small town and it was just, I don't know, weird. Mm-hmm. So anyway, I kept it up for a while. And then, I mean, really, it was probably only a year or two tops that I was not really paying attention to what was going on in the toy aisle. But then, you know, Power of the Force 2 came out, and yeah. I was like a junior in high school, and I went absolutely insane for it. Like, I didn't know they were coming out. My mom surprised me on Christmas morning with like six or seven like brand new Star Wars figures. You know, like I was blown away, and immediately like ran to Walmart to, you know, find the rest of the wave. And that like completely reignited toy collecting for me. You know, like at all that Toy Biz X-Men stuff and the McFarlane and, you know, all the big 90s lines.
Which, I mean, to only step away for 2 years is crazy. Like I stepped away forever until I came back to the podcast.
Yeah. Yeah. There are probably some, you know, some spots here and there along the way where, you know, I'd fall out of favor with collecting, yeah. and, you know, I kind of sell off some stuff or whatever, you know, take a break from collecting, but it was always there, you know, in the background for me to have toys in my life.
Yeah. After taking because I'm assuming we go to school for art, you have some kind of art influence or something around that in order to get to toys. Or no? Oh no. Let's hear about it. What do we?
I have a very strange path to all of it. And a lot of it is kind of just being in the right place at the right time, I guess. But I was in school in 2011 when I first got the concept for what would become Warlords of War. So I was, you know, I'm what, 34 at that point, you know, a junior equivalent in college as an adult, going to an engineering school for fine arts. I started getting this idea. I wanted to make a coloring book, and so I was gonna like screen print a coloring book, because coloring books are a thing that I collect too, like vintage 80s coloring books. So I wanted to do something that was like a tribute to Masters of the Universe, and I started thinking up all these like weird characters and funny names, and the more I started thinking about it, the more I really started to like the idea, and I started to think that maybe there was something here, but I just didn't know what that was going to be yet. So then at C2E2, that next year, 2012, that's the Chicago Toy, and I'm sorry, Chicago Comic mm-hmm. and Entertainment Expo. I ended up meeting Marty Hansen, aka the God Beast.
Yeah.
Are you familiar with Marty?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. So Marty was doing a lot of resin work at the time, mm-hmm. and doing a lot of bootleg stuff. He's, you know, very well known for being a resin bootlegger many, many years before it became like an art movement, you know, like it was just a thing that people did. It was a craft. So I saw that he had some bootleg resin 5.5 stuff on his table by this artist, Giant Japanese Monster Bad and Galaxor. And, I was like, well, this is it, obviously. Like, I can totally make toys, you know, I could learn how to do this. So that's where the impetus really began for me to start making resin toys. I decided that Warlords of War was now going to be a toy line, and I set out to make Bognar. And he was released officially on September 21st, right, of 2012.
Jeez. I have to go back a little bit.
Yes, of course, please.
For the comic book or the coloring book, doing a screen printed version of a coloring book is already interesting, because that's not something that people usually do. or how they, those are created.
Yeah, sure.
So I do want to ask about that, but then also you collect unused 80s coloring books.
Unused, used, yeah, whatever.
What is that? Where did that come from?
I like coloring. I've always, you know, I just had a lot of coloring books as a kid. Yeah. Like that was, again, I'm a child of that era. My parents and my grandparents did a really good job of fostering my my creative energies as a child. So so I always had coloring books and watercolor pads and you know, markers and crayons and everything. It was just, you know, one of those other things like toys that really got its claws in me and stuck with me all this time. So yeah, I love the artwork in them. I mean, it can be just absolute garbage up to, like, I mean, some of the most beautiful illustrative line work you've ever seen. It's it's a lot of fun, and there's just a lot of totally ridiculous ones. Like I have a Jaws 2 coloring book.
Okay. I got my wife a People of Walmart coloring book one.
Oh yeah, yeah,
and it's so good. How many coloring books are we talking that you have?
I mean, I probably have somewhere up around 50.
Oh, that's not bad.
It's not like a massive collection or anything, you know, but it's you know.
That's something that you're like
a chunk of coloring books.
Yeah, I have time right now. I'm gonna go grab a coloring book. I see that. So then you get to the point where you want to make a coloring book, which already a lot of people have tried this, but it's a big task to make a coloring book. And you chose to go the route screen printing.
Yeah. Yeah. I was going to have to make a screen, you know, for every single page. And I don't know. It was just some wild hair that I got. You know, it's fine art. I'm trying to do something.
Yeah,
that keeps my interest. Mm-hmm. In this, you know, sort of academic art environment. So doing a coloring book seemed like a fun idea at the time.
That's such a good idea.
That's really about as deep as it goes. Yeah. Just thought it'd be cool.
That's a good idea. And then before we get in depth about Bognar, tell me, like, when you encounter these resin artists, because this is early on. I mean, the podcast has let me find a lot of old resin things. Yeah. And I mean, we can walk it back. Suck Lord is like 2004-ish. But even further, we have artists that are producing resin figures in 89, which is unreal.
Yeah, like the Disarticulators? Or?
I have one from Steven Hillenburg and Bert Payne.
Okay. Yeah, right.
And it's this resin Walt sickle figure where it's Walt Disney stuck in an icicle. And they sold thousands of them. And it's crazy to think that resin figures started even earlier than Suck Lord is weird to talk about. And so you're meeting some of these people at an early stage, and somehow it was just an immediate click over without knowing how to make the figures. Tell me about that jump.
So I'll take it back just a couple years before that. I was a subscriber and an avid reader of Toy Fair magazine. Okay. And there was an article 1 month in Toy Fair about how to make your own custom bootleg action figure. And it was like a 4 or 6 page spread. It was really cool. It was like this whole like step-by-step, you know, illustrated a guide on how to make a bootleg green 3/4 figure. And lo and behold, it was written by Suck Lord. I didn't know who he was at the time, but I saw this and I was like, this is, you know, this is really freaking cool. I can totally do this one day. So I tore it out of the magazine, put it in a file folder and stuffed it away in my, you know, shit to do later pile. So then fast forward now, back to 2012. One of the other things that I was doing at school, in addition to screen printing, was ceramics. Mm-hmm. So I was already sculpting and making molds and casting things, you know. So I was doing a lot of slip cast porcelain at the time. So kind of like recollection toys, right? So kind of all these things came together, and I saw in, you know, bootleg toy making a little bit of everything that I was doing at the time. So it just seemed like the most logical thing for me to do. And as I started doing more research, and as Marty started kind of mentoring me on how to, you know, on how to make toys, then I started to discover more about, you know, what was going on in this this very burgeoning, you know, nascent bootleg toy scene. Mm-hmm. with people like, you know, Sucklord and Healy you know, like Killer was just getting started at that point. And I was fortunate to also catch the eye of Ben Spencer, Mr. Galaxor, at that C2E2, and he started following me through my, you know, the early days of the Bognar project, and gave me a lot of press on his blog. It was called Nerd City at the time, and it helped get my name out, and it got me into the first Clutter show, the first in action figures at Clutter in 2013. So I was there with, yeah, you know, with Killer, and it was his first show too. We actually met up at the airport and hung out, and yeah, I don't know. It was a cool experience. Like just right out of the gate to be kind of whisked into this this group of you know, bootleg artists, people who were like really kind of trying to be part of the designer toy scene. Which I was aware of. Like when I lived in Chicago, I lived a block away from the original Rotofugi. Mm-hmm. And you know, so like I had popped in there several times. I knew what designer toys were. I just, it wasn't really my goal to become a designer toy maker. Mm-hmm. That's kind of where I ended up and you know, where I lived for a while.
Empire Blister. Empire Blisters. Specializing in action figure blisters. 2.75 inch or 1/18 scale. 19 different styles. Two sizes of clamshell figure cases. Four different bulk pack options. Quantities of 100 sample packs available. Empire Blisters.
Now functional Toys on Tap.
That means a 10% off coupon on checkout. Use code Toys on Tap 10. That's TOYSONTAP 10.
Empire Blisters.
Yeah, which is, I mean, encountering, especially that all these people still continue. That's what we're seeing now. Is I came in during COVID, so there was a big influx because we all had time, and so many of them stopped creating. And so it's, you got to like meet these people and then continue with them, which is amazing. Mm-hmm. And then we come to the creation of Bognar, which we already talked a little bit about the other one that has kind of an influence from Dino Riders. Tell me about Bognar being a couple things, like kind of has this Cthulhu-esque, kind of has this like Motu-esque at a smaller scale. Just is a fun toy. Like if anything else, it's a fun toy of a scary monster. So tell me about Bognar, how he started to create, what he looks like, or how many even additions there were.
So Bognar was the first character that I really started to form the concept of Warlords of War around. like he was kind of the one where like as soon as I thought of who he was going to be, it was like, all right, yeah, cool, this is this is it. So Bogner was very much influenced by Masters of the Universe. It's incredibly apparent in his design and overall silhouette. But he is he's kind of my mix of Swamp Thing, Man Thing, and a Masters of the Universe evil warrior. So he is a villain. A lot of people don't seem to realize that.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's one of the big bads in the story. So he's a scientist who, you know, of course was working on benevolent experiments to help the city's food shortage problems, and ended up getting turned into a horrifying monster,
as we all do.
As one is wont to do around lots of dangerous chemicals. So it's a very, you know, Swamp Thing, Man Thing kind of origin story, but that's why people relate to him, I think, you know, because he is familiar. And I mean, like a lot of people, I don't know, who doesn't like a swamp monster? Everybody loves Swamp Thing. And you know, throw that into a put some furry trunks on him and some big muscles and just turns the fun up a little bit.
Yeah. You're creating this and you're kind of dabbling in a new era or a new thing that's coming. And YouTube at this point isn't super great. It's still weird videos and vlogs. But you are trying to figure out how to create this figure. Who'd you go to? Who helped you along in this resin thing?
So the biggest resource that I had access to was Marty. I was able to just, you know, give Marty a call and, you know, he could like walk me through some things and give me, you know, tips on where to find stuff. There was actually a surprising amount of info out there if you did the digging. And I did a lot of digging, and I did find some videos that were extremely helpful. A couple that showed how to, generally how to convert a pressure pot, or a paint pot into a pressure pot. So, I watched a bunch of things. You know, I talked to Marty, and then I just went out and, you know, bought the stuff I thought I needed, and, you know, kind of put together my own pot. And away I went. Having him to generally point me in the right direction was really huge. I mean, I don't know how much information there is out there now. I can't imagine there's so any much. Shortage of it. And it's got to be impossible to try and find a place to start. I'm sorry, I don't have any great advice to offer. This was 12 years ago. And the internet's a different place these days. So
as you are doing this, and you create Bognar, and you see a success in a love for the character, people want this character. You then next step, how are we creating other villains? We got to create other goods, all that stuff.
Yeah, there was kind of a novelty to it at first, because it was a playable toy that was, that was kind of being sold as part of, again, you know, this designer toy, this bootleg toy scene. Yeah. So it was, you know, it was like all the same process, all the same tools, but, you know, instead of just doing like a slug figure, you know, this was fully articulated. It was, you know, like something ridiculous, like 13 molds to make one figure, and unreal. All these different parts, and everything was magnetically articulated, and that came straight from Marty. You know, that was his, you know, recommendation for me to do something that was that would kind of mimic the Glios playability, but not use the Glios joint. So Yeah, sorry. I guess I'm going to back up just a little bit more. When I first started out, the initial concept for Bognar was to be a GLIOS compatible toy.
Which if we can pause right there.
Yeah.
Tell everyone, I don't know the actual history of GLIOS or why that would have even been a goal. Can you share about that?
Yeah. This is going to be so all over the place.
I'm into it.
So GLIOS is it's a fit function, right? Mm-hmm. It's a peg and socket system for articulation and building with PVC action figures. This was created by Matt Dowdy and Mark Baudet. O'Neill Design. They own GLIOS.
Yeah.
And produce the GLIOS action figures. They've been doing it for something ridiculous, like 15, 16 years. I don't know. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of other creators who use the same peg and socket system. Their toys get made in the same factory. They're all compatible with each other. There's about a dozen of us who are actively in production at any given time at the factory. All of our toys have completely different aesthetics, but are all interchangeable, kind of like, Legos with action figures or something. If you're interested in checking out more, there's a really great video that Craftsman put out a couple years ago that is a, awesome explanation of GLIOS and intro to a lot of different toy lines within the GLIOS sphere.
That's awesome.
It's a factory produced injection molded PVC, super durable, super playable. They're great toys, a lot of fun. Mm-hmm.
So when that becomes a goal.
So Marty had, I apologize for interrupting, Marty had on his table some other GLIOS stuff too. Mm-hmm. And that was something important I forgot to mention. That was also my first introduction to GLIOS. Was at that C2E2. So I see the GLIOS, I see resin action figures, and I'm like, cool, can I do resin action figures that are interchangeable like GLIOS toys? And I went to Dowdy, the owner at O'Neill, and I was like, hey, this is my idea. And he told me, that's super awesome. The GLIOS joint is not going to support the weight of a figure of that size. So you need to make it smaller, or make it in resin, see how it sells, create an audience. If you find that you're connecting with a fan base, then we'll talk about going into PVC production. And, that basically took me until 2016, before we actually started working on a production line. So there were 4 years in there where I was 100% just a resin artist, doing everything and mostly 5.5, some 3 3/4. I did several different versions of Bognar, several other characters from Warlords of War, but also a whole slew of other resin characters and one-offs and additions and pieces, collaborations with other artists, etc. So it was very busy.
But grinding and building and doing what he did or what he asked you to do, and then seeing you, there's a like one of your first posts is about Warlords of War, and then it's like within the next couple posts it's like, I am proud to announce that I am now GLIOS, we're headed this way. Which that was still only Bognar, correct, at the beginning?
So that's okay. That was like, I guess you're talking about my Warlords of War Instagram. So that was started at the beginning of the GLIOS Warlords of War line.
Great.
Up till that point I was just Manor Monster. And so if you look at my Manor Monster Instagram, then that'll take you back, to the beginning of my resin career. Mm-hmm. You can see stuff before that, some of my ceramics and screen printing and you know, all that stuff I was working on.
Yeah.
In those early days. So, yeah.
So you create that crazy cool announcement, and all of a sudden you're in kind of this club, basically, of like, these are the figures that it can be interchangeable with. These are the things that exist. And I've noticed on your figures, there's some specific things about them that are really enticing. They remind me a lot of toys when I was a little kid, where it's like the hand is like this, so it just holds things, or which hard as hell to do with resin and mold making and stuff. So as you do that, at what point do you produce the next one? So you're working with them to do Glios, and this figure is getting there. When do you shoot out the next one ready to go?
So it was 2017 when I released the Bognar set. And then in 2 years later, 2015, I put out the, sorry, I'm going backwards.
Yeah.
2019.
Yeah.
From 17 to 19, that was the Clobber set. And he's like one of the main heroes in the story. And that's the set that has that cool like cobra looking snake head in it. And it's a little more military themed. You know, Clobber is kind of the man at arms of Warlords of War. So he's like head of the city guard, and kind of a, you know, very techie kung fu guy.
Yeah. Which it crazy that you like one gain success enough to where they say, okay, we'll work with you, let's do this, and then are just pushing out another one. How many in this entire set do you have?
Oh man.
And then it starts going to like volumes, basically.
Yeah. Well, I'm getting ready to release wave 20.
Holy hell.
And I mean, there have been at least three figures, as many as, you know, as many as five or six in a wave, you know. So I don't know, man. There's
insane,
there's dozens, you know, of different variations that I've done on these figures.
By the time you release, tell me about the success, or like the feelings around the success when you release wave one, and then all of a sudden you're about to release wave two. Because that step already is huge. And so tell me about like what we're feeling. Is this becoming a full-time job for you? All that stuff.
So, I mean, at the time I had been working full-time. I actually, as I was developing the brand for production, I went back to school, and I was going to school for computer-aided drafting. And, you know, kind of wanted to get a taste for 3D sculpting, 3D modeling. And, you know, that was definitely the way the industry was trending in a hurry. And this is, you know, 2015 or so. And
we interrupt this broadcast of Toys on Tap to bring you this.
Meanwhile, in a galaxy of bootleg treasures.
DOV2, we have engine failure. We must crash land on DKE Toy Planet.
Oh my, we're doomed.
Wait, salvation. Hooray, we're saved, DOV2. Limited edition custom artist made action figures and DKE toys.
Check out www.dketoys.com for a full catalog.
Hooray for custom action figures.
Anyway, I fell into a full-time day job doing civil engineering. So so I'm already working full-time when by the time my Bognar production figure comes out.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm still working there. Like it just works better for me having that 9-to-5, that steady paycheck and you know, bills and insurance and everything covered. I tried doing art full time, and it drove me to a pretty dark place. And we can get into that another time. be happy to talk, you know, do a whole episode on mental health and art. But anyway, producing art for someone other than myself did not work. So producing art for a paycheck did not work for me. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's a lot more fun when it's just basically for me. And that's what everything I do is with my toys. I make toys that I want to make.
Yeah.
And hopefully they resonate with people, which they seem to. So
yeah, they have been. Holy moly.
Yeah. Anyway, little off topic there. Totally forgot your question.
It was tell me about the feeling from wave one.
Wave one. So wave one sold out like immediately.
Insane. How many were released in wave one? Do you remember?
So there were three styles released in wave one, and there were probably around 250 of each.
And they sold out immediately.
These are really small runs. You know, mm-hmm. they're, you know, it's a decent size, but it's very small. Mm-hmm. You know, it's definitely an indie thing still. You know, we're not talking thousands of units. It's a couple hundred tops generally. It was within, I think, 7 minutes. I had sold out, which was awesome. I was super pumped. So I'm like, all right, well, I gotta order more for wave two. So I like almost doubled my order for wave two. And I spent so much time working on it, trying to like get the colors right. And I was really scared to go, you know, to follow it up. Because I was really uncertain above myself, I guess. But wave two came out and did not sell out right away. It took a very, very long time for wave two to sell out. I had figures for a couple of years afterwards from that wave. But I sold enough to, you know, to keep going. But I almost died right there on the second wave.
Yeah.
I kept going and got better and figured out, you know, got into my groove. So mm-hmm.
selling out on your first release, three figures, 250 a piece. That's an insane amount of toys. And then having to like get that out to everyone or doing all that stuff.
I'm in my office at home. Yeah. This is all like my inventory and all my packing supplies. Like this is a more or less a one person operation, you know, come fulfillment time. My wonderful wife and my good friends, Brad and Stacy. You've had Brad on the podcast, mm-hmm. Battle Babies. They'll come over and help me out, getting everything packed and shipped. But yeah, otherwise, it's me, you know, design and advertisement and socials and
yeah,
the whole thing.
Finding your groove. And when you say that, are you talking the amount that you need to order in order to sell, or are you talking figuring out what the crowd wants around you, that kind of stuff?
It's some of it's figuring out like what is going to sell, mm-hmm. It's like balancing that, making cool stuff that I'd want on my shelf, with, making cool stuff that I want on my shelf that I can also sell.
Yeah.
You know, so there've been a ton of colorways that I've designed that I had to set aside or completely scrap because I just didn't think they were, you know, really that marketable. Mm-hmm. You know, super cool designs, but it was for like me and six other people. So
it's crazy to find a groove. I think in art in general, it's shocking because people's tastes change so rapidly this not being, even now it's not a huge scene. There's a lot of artists out there, but it's still not where it could be or where it's headed. And so back then, to be able to be doing that and crushing it is so crazy.
It was a cool transition.
Yeah.
I mean, like a really cool transition, being able to, you know, kind of pack up the pressure pot and the resin and everything and you know, take up the digital pen and really just focus on design, which is my favorite part.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of it really is coloring. Like doing coloring pages.
Yeah.
You know, like when I have a mechanical, like it's a, you know, it's a 2D illustration of a 3D action figure, and I color in the lines and kind of all goes back to that, you know. It's a lot of fun.
When you got to, let's say, wave 15.
Okay.
Because you're just in this group producing, selling, doing what you do best. You get there. Is there a point along the way that you start to think, is there something more? Like, do I want to create something more? Is this the end? What are we doing?
Well, I mean, I've had a third figure in development for 4 years now, which is way too long.
Yeah.
But, there's been a lot of hiccups along the way and a lot of life changes. And, you know, there was this pandemic thing that happened too. And, you know, that kind of threw several wrenches in, but anyway, so I've got another figure that is in development, in Warlords of War, our first female figure, the first female figure in the line. Ultimately there are 8 characters in the main lineup that I want to produce. So that's still the goal. I'm still working towards that at, you know, the pace that I can. I'd love to see those happen. Beyond that though, I'm working on a licensed project right now that I can't talk about today, but it's pretty cool. This is my first time working, you know, with a licensor. So I'm pretty stoked about that.
Yeah.
We'll see where things go from there. I would love to do a vinyl Bognar. Mm-hmm. I think that would be super rad. And I've talked to a few people over the years about doing that, but just, you know, haven't worked it into the schedule yet.
Yeah. When you look
going
over...
back to five, sorry.
Yeah, go ahead.
Going back to 5.5, even, you know, doing something like that, you know, but not in resin, maybe something actually factory produced.
Which is awesome. I think the 5.5 scale, always great. When you look over all that you've done and created, and what's crazy is the to-do list that you seem to have. Plus now the licensing stuff. What is next in the big picture for Warlords of War? And what do you hope is to come from this?
I really want to keep producing in the 3-inch scale. I love these figures. I love the scale. I would like to be able to reach more of an audience. I think GLaDOS has a ton of potential that is not really being seen by people. You know, it's all a very kind of, you know, small network of companies and a very small fan base, and I'd love to see that grow a little bit. And you know, there's been talk about maybe doing a Kickstarter to fund this next figure, so that's something that I'm still kind of playing around with. I think that might, you know, be a good way to get some more eyes on it, but you know, really it's just about taking things as they come. And I've tried to get myself to a place where I I'm happier being a little less ambitious.
Yeah.
Taking care of myself a little more. And not stressing out too much about what the future may or may not hold for for my art. You know, I will always be producing something, you know, whether that's toys or just, you know, playing around in old coloring books.
Geez, that sounds absolutely phenomenal. We have two more parts of the podcast that kind of come. The last part of this is just how people can get in touch with you. We want you to plug everything. How do we get your figures, all that good stuff? And then we're going to jump into the nitty gritty, which is a specific tailored question just for you, for everyone on the Patreon. So please plug all your stuff.
The best way probably to get a hold of me is through Instagram at Warlords of War. I'm sure there will be a link or something. But again, it's W-O-R. I'm also at Manor Monster on Instagram. There are links there to my store. You can check out everything that I've got in stock there. There are links to other creators. You can go to, you know, the World Wide Web or your favorite video provider and just, you know, do a search for Glios. And, you know, there's a whole, you know, cool world of independent toys waiting for you to discover.
Heck yeah. Brandon, thank you so much for coming on Toys on Tap.
Thank you again for having me.